Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, and we're the hosts of The Mom Hour.
On this show, we're joined by a team of unique mom voices from across the country and in different stages of motherhood to bring you tips, ideas, and encouragement, and to help you feel a little less alone.
We all know that motherhood is a lot easier when real moms share honest truths and remind each other that it's all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to The Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to The Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. I love when we get to pop in and do a second episode of the week.
Yeah, a little surprise for all of you, but I'm really excited about this topic today because there has been so much press lately about AI, for one thing, and deep fakes, and sort of this, the nature of reality and the way we humans perceive reality. And like, is it becoming harder to even know what's real and what's not? It's a big topic right now. And I know it can cause a lot of panic and worry. I mean, it's already causing anxiety among moms of older kids. I can only imagine if you had a little one kind of entering this world right now, how fraught that could seem.
Yeah, it can seem. I have to admit, I was like kind of ignoring all discussions about AI for like 2 years, or I don't know, an amount of time. That's kind of a long time. But lately, I have been listening to some really interesting podcast episodes and like having a few more conversations. And I am personally feeling at least like I'm ready to like engage in the conversation. But you're right, it does bring up fear for parents. I think anytime there's something that is changing really quickly, it can feel scary. And when it comes to our kids, we are naturally protective. So I think today we're almost talking about like, okay, AI's here and it's changing everything fast, but we still have an opportunity to shape our kids' real experiences, the things they touch and see and smell and hear with their bodies. And I guess as a parent, I personally have been feeling almost more inspired about that lately. Like what is the realness that I want my kids to experience in childhood, in adolescence?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we need to go too deeply into why that's important. I think there's a body of research that shows why it is important to engage with the real world. I think what we want to do is not bash tech because we both benefit from it and use it, and also not to make it sound scary and hopeless, but more to say, hey, we still have like, we're still in front of our kids. Like we're still in their real touchable lives, and we get to kind of create an environment for them regardless of even what resources we have. You might even argue that it might be easier to do this if you have fewer resources in some ways, but like we still can do that. We still have a lot of opportunities. And I think we're going to be talking mostly about the opportunities we've experienced with our kids as they've been growing up and the opportunities we're still seeing now, but it does really change. We talked a little bit about this before we started recording that like the experience of having little kids, everything is sort of promoted to be very tactile. Everything from little books with like little crinkly things your baby can touch to toys that squeak and feel, you know, sandpaper that feels rough. Like being a mom of a little one is kind of by default so tactile.
Sensory,
and then, and sensory. And then as they get older, it can start to feel a little less embodied, let's say.
Well, and I would add to that that I have noticed myself, I have needed to be really intentional with myself about having sensory or embodied experiences in the last couple of years, because you and I work on the internet. We work online. Everything post-pandemic can be done virtually or, you know, like on an app on your phone. And I've actually felt like a real pull, a real craving in myself to have a little more physicality, a little more in-person connection. And that's just me. Everybody's having their own experience. And then as my kids have become teenagers and their schooling and their hobbies are increasingly also digital. And again, this is not to bash technology. It's almost to offer a counterbalance or a counterpoint. It's not to get rid of what we know is here, but it's like, what can we reintroduce for ourselves and for our kids that is corporeal? Is that how you say that word? Like that corporeal. Is embodied, that is like physical and real.
Yeah. I think too, I was just listening to a podcast with a writer who I will definitely find her name for the show notes, but she's written a lot of books about movement, and was one of the books that I really want to read even says like the way we talk about physical jobs to our kids impacts the way they feel about using their bodies. And sort of it, like the podcast was went to, it wasn't really about kids. It was kind of about how removed our bodies are becoming sometimes from our work and everything else. And I think we're craving that. I got to milk a goat this week.
I know.
And I, first of all, just loved it so much. But I was like, why are people still drawn to this? Like, why do I like feeding my chickens? Why do I like going for walks? It's not just about health. Like, why do I want to milk a goat? It's a very real experience that cannot be, what's that game people were playing, Farmville?
Yep.
Not the same. Not the same thing. Right. And I think that we are all craving that. And we do have so many opportunities, whether our kids are little and playing with toys that make sounds and that they can touch and all that, or whether they're older and maybe their entertainment is going increasingly online, but we still have ways to introduce very real experiences into their real worlds.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we thought we'd talk about just some broad categories and like how that either has looked in our families in the past or looks in our family lives right now. I'm going to start with live performance. And I'm going to say this absolutely does not need to be pro level. And I'm going to start just by talking about not having gone to see any community theater since the pandemic. Like, bad on me. But I just didn't go for a long time. It was kind of weird and very, you know, it's very crowded in there. And I just, you know, early COVID.
The first 2 years were very challenging, if at all available. So yeah, right, you get a pass. Right. It takes a while for that to come back.
Thanks for the pass. Well, then it just fell off my radar and I just didn't go and didn't go and didn't go. And then it was like, this is silly. And I was offered a ticket to go see a play. And I went and I was like, oh, right. This is why people go to see community theater, because you don't ever know. And same thing with any live theater, but I think it's particularly true in community theater. Like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yep.
So there's not only like the I'm seeing with my eyes, I'm hearing with my ears, I'm touching the people on either side of me with my shoulders, but like they could fall off the stage or flub their lines. So there's like an additional sense of reality to it that might not happen when there's something that's been created to be perfect or to seem like exactly what you want it to be. Like, a live performance might not end up being even close to what you want it to be or what you expected at all. But there's something to that sort of unexpected nature of it. And my kids, when they were littler, several of them did community theater. They've all done performances through school, but it's not so much an organized way that we go through life or like a hobby for us anymore. But there's still glimmers of it. Like, you were at my wedding reception party thing. I wouldn't even call it a reception, but it was a party. There was like a big karaoke party and there were groups of teenage boys getting up and singing karaoke together awkwardly and poorly. And they loved it because of all of those things. Like, you use your body, you use your voice, you hear each other, you see everything. I'm sure it smelled weird up there too.
Yeah. Well, there's actually like a real vulnerability. There's of course vulnerability in performing, but there's almost also a kind of vulnerability or potential light embarrassment, awkwardness, even sometimes in watching a live performance. And I'm thinking about when you were talking about like it doesn't have to be pro level, I actually think there's something even realer about going to see like a junior high orchestra or a high school choir concert. Yes. Or a very small community theater, or watching a street perform. Have you ever like been, I don't know, when the weather's nice, like in some kind of street fair or downtown like pedestrian area, and there's somebody who is playing a violin with their thing open? Like, it's actually quite vulnerable to watch somebody perform, and they have their expectations, you have their expectations. Sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's cringy. You have to show grace as an audience member. I don't know. I just think if we're talking about what's real, I almost think small participating in or watching, the smaller the performance, the more real it is, because like you said, anything could happen and real feelings are on the line for everyone. So I totally agree. I think I've shared over the years, the last few years, I have been in my seeking out live performance era as soon as I was able post-COVID. So we've seen a lot as a family. And then my older two kids perform in a teen theater company. And it's just been like, it has been one of the greatest joys of the last few years for me. But I will share that my third child, who is less performance inclined, sang in an elementary school chorus this year and also did a little like a little performance they had to do for class. Just a reminder how glad I am, how grateful I am that those things are still happening and are still mandatory, because this kid may never pursue performance when it's not required of her. I just found myself, she'd come home and she'd tell me how like their dance that they're doing for their, it's just an elementary school like spring performance. And they're doing a little swing dance as a class. And every week she would come home and tell me, well, first of all, the drama of who's dancing with who, because that's very high in fifth grade. That's like all over the place, what they have to wear. And then she said, oh, this is the last rehearsal with the choreographer. And I was so glad she's getting that experience, because there's kids who are maybe will be naturally drawn to it. And then there's kids who aren't, and she is not. And yet she's having to push through some discomfort. She's laughing. She's like, oh my gosh, we were all falling over the place. It's just, you can't get that virtually in any way.
Right. Yeah. I love that. And I think when I think about things being done kind of on this like smaller scale, let's say, or, you know, like less pro, it also makes me think about like gentle spectacle. I'm going to explain what I mean.
Okay.
I've been watching.
Sounds like a good name for like an essay or a book, though. I'm interested already.
Well, what I'm thinking about is I've been watching it was a BBC show from probably like 10 years ago. And I'm watching one called Edwardian Farm. But basically what they do is they go back to some era and these historians reenact what it would be like to live in that era and try to like run a farm, basically. So in shows like that, there's always a part where they like go to the town fair or the town carnival. Uh-huh. And it was like the highlight. Like maybe there was going to be, I don't know, a 5-minute fireworks display, or right. You got to have lemonade the only time of the year, whatever it was, right? There was going to be a parade. And how I'm very guilty of being a little cynical about those sorts of things and being like, this is no fun. Like, this is corny.
Right.
They always have the same Shriners on the same little bikes. Like, what's going on? I don't want to go to that. But I feel like there is something really valuable that when I watch those shows, I feel a little sad that I've been kind of cynical about those small, you know, little homey, homespun spectacle. They are like, it's like what would have been a spectacle once now doesn't impress us anymore.
Right.
And I hope that as our entertainment becomes more and more high tech, high budget, tailored to your exact wishes,
right,
and your algorithm, that we don't lose the ability to be a little bit odd or even just entertained and having a good nature about like the float that the teenagers put together for $50.
Yes, exactly. And that's kind of what I meant when I said sometimes it's not even good and you have to figure out how to react, because you're so right. When you're delivered algorithmically the thing that you are already going to like, and it's on a private screen in your house, it's nothing like the experience of sitting through like a third grade orchestra concert where everyone's got to, we are going to band together to get through this and we are going to clap our hearts out. Or like somebody, I saw a live dance performance recently with pre-professional college age dancers, and two women fell on stage in the first like 5 minutes. And I forgot about just like, you don't want that to happen, but like to your point, it's unpredictable. And sometimes it does happen. And there's like the collective gasp and then they, you know, it's just,
and then the, ooh, yes. And then everyone's happy when they get back up. Yes. And I just, that is something I don't know how we preserve that, because I do think as things become more and more and more tailored to professionalized, let's say, and more centralized, how do we make it okay to still put yourself out there? I guess we just do it and we keep showing up for it.
Yeah.
It's part of the human spirit. We always want to keep showing up and we want to keep putting ourselves out there. I just hope that we still stay a general enough audience that we're willing to kind of sit through and sometimes grit our teeth a little bit.
Yeah.
through the stuff that's not tailored for us.
Yeah.
Sarah, you and I talk a lot about what a great bonding experience it can be when families explore hobbies together. And that makes me think of our sponsor, Carnegie Hall Kids. Carnegie Hall Kids is a free website for kids ages 5 through 12 to learn about music through fun games and quizzes. And they have so many online resources that can help facilitate music education as a family. So if music and culture are a value in your family, I think this is such an easy way to explore that.
Yeah, before we started working with Carnegie Hall Kids, I knew about Carnegie Hall because of all the famous artists who have performed there over the last, 100 years or so. And now I think it's so great they're making all that incredible music and history accessible to kids all over the world for free.
Yeah, and with summer break around the corner, moms are always looking for some guilt-free screen options to offer their bored kids. I would suggest Carnegie Hall Kids' interactive musical explorers around the world map. It teaches kids different musical traditions like Vietnamese folk, cumbia from Colombia, bluegrass and jazz from the U.S., and a lot more.
Yeah, that map is really fun. Well, listeners, whether you're looking for music education you can do as a family or for your kids to explore independently, start the musical journey early and go to kids.carnegiehall.org to check out fun, child-friendly games and quizzes.
All right. Well, another one that I will say isn't happening a ton in my house anymore, but used to happen a lot, and I'd like to actually help happen more, is kind of like embodied play. And I mean anything from a game of tag in your backyard to a game of Twister in your living room to charades at a party or things like that. Like play that maybe is like group play that involves your body.
Yeah. I mean, isn't this something that just seems to drop off so much after kids are about 10 or something? I mean,
as soon as they stop having recess, really. Like, it doesn't happen at home either because maybe they don't want to do it.
Well, right. I was going to say, even if they're still having recess at school, they get home and there's just the everything beckons, whether it's, extracurriculars. And by the way, like I think physical extracurriculars like soccer or martial arts or dance, those are obviously really great to be embodied and to be physical, but I do think there's a difference in what you're talking about, which is play and tends to be more spontaneous, more organic, and those other things. So it's not either or, one's bad, one's good, but it is pretty different. We got our kids a backyard trampoline for Christmas, kind of on a whim. And I wondered, are they too old for this? So, they were 15, 13, and 11 when we got it for them. And I have just been delighted at the physicality of my kids jumping on the trampoline together. I mean, of course, it's great exercise for them and they get silly and, Violet teaches herself tricks and the big kids actually, you'll appreciate this, Megan, because you're getting ready to sing a concert. The big kids have been practicing their songs for the musical while jumping to build up their cardio.
Don't you remember doing stuff like that when you were, probably wasn't thinking of it to build up cardio, but like jumping and singing, jumping and trying to do dance moves.
Yes, totally. Yes. And they were like, I want to see if I can still sing when I'm, because they'll have to sing and dance at the same time. So it's kind of cute. But I have also caught them like playing games, to your point, not just jumping on the trampoline, but actually like they play this game called Dead Man Out There. And it's like, close your eyes and try to grab each other. So it is like tag. It's like, I'm trying to think of, like Blind Man's Bluff, like that kind of thing. And it's just, it brings me so much joy because I have a tendency to think, oh, my kids are too old. In a recent episode, I talked about those placemats I rebought because the kids got a kick out of these learning placemats. So I don't know, when it comes to embodying your big kids, I wonder if sometimes the ticket is reintroduce something they loved when they were little.
Yeah, I love this so much because I have witnessed how my kids will, if they're given the opportunity or the necessity to use their bodies, it seems to like loosen them up in all the ways and brings out a silliness and like a totally different side of them. So the example that comes to my mind is the pool. You could throw all of my kids, the oldest being 26, in a pool together and they all turn into children. Like they all turn into little kids again and they just interact differently. They talk differently. Everything about it is a little bit different. Clara and Owen like to wrestle and kind of, I don't know, like they pretend karate. It's, I don't know what it is. It's goofy. And sometimes it's a little bit annoying, but like, I really try to just stay out of the way and let them do it, because they, I can tell when they're being physically, they're just being physical together. They're getting along better. They're laughing. They're talking. Then they might go sit on the couch and watch, you know, a show together for a little while, but it's, you can tell it's a bonding thing, and they're just doing dumb things with their arms and like kind of smacking at each other a little bit. Not, you know, they're not trying to hurt each other.
No, I know what you mean.
But it's like, yeah, that like, there's a phrase for it that I'm not going to use on the podcast, but like grab, you know, grab butt. Anyway, they're playing a lot of that. And it, I think it does something.
I have a question for you about this. And I have a hunch. Are you physically playful yourself? Like, would you ever just like tell Eric, we're going to race to the end of the edge of the driveway before we get in the car? Like, are you, do you have bursts of spontaneous, playful, physical energy? And I don't mean like other kinds of play.
No.
Yeah, me neither. That was my guess.
I would literally never race to the end of the driveway.
Well, it's just an example.
Literally not. But you know what I might do? I might do a funny dance move in the kitchen or something. Like something within my realm of things that I would do. I can be kind of goofy and awkward, but a lot of the times, no. And it's a lot rarer than it used to be.
Yeah. I am not either. Like, I am not a wrestler or a tickler or like a chase and be chased. I never probably did play as much that way. I'm sure I did a little bit as a kid. So I think that's something just to acknowledge. Not everybody is. But I go out on the trampoline sometimes with Violet, and it feels good. Like, it feels good.
I love trampolines.
So we as adults can benefit from really freeing, silly movements too. I'm trying to think, there was something else I was doing recently where I was, Violet was in the habit of setting up obstacle courses in our backyard for a while. And I would try to do them. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to hurt myself, first of all, but also what a different type of feeling. It's not the same as working out. It's not the same as, it's just different. It's physical play.
Yeah. I have kind of challenged myself to play on like playground equipment if there's not small children who need it. I don't like
move
push
over
them out of the
move over Joey.
Yeah, no, but like there is something that taps you into that experience of being a child and playing that I think can be really fun. And when I was a kid, I definitely like, I was turning cartwheels all the time. I was constantly doing somersaults. I was running all around. So like, I was very amped up in a way when I was a kid, and I miss that sometimes.
Yeah.
I've also noticed that if I, I'm just going to use Clara and Owen as an example again, because they're just the kids I'm around the most right now. But if they're sort of given an outdoor, like a big space outdoors with nothing else to do, they will eventually run races and stuff. It's not their first inclination, but if you just kind of are sitting out in the yard and there's like nothing else to do, which is, I think the opportunity there is just take them outside and don't give them anything else to do for a while and see what happens. We had a football in by our back door last year, and the kids would go out every so often and just throw the football around, or we had Nerf guns by the back door, and they would grab them and go burn energy off in the yard, just like shooting Nerf guns at each other. I think that that is the kind of thing where you can build opportunities to do that sort of thing. But sometimes you have to be kind of patient and wait. Like, you have to set it up, like set the stage, and then give them the white space to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about something again back in that visual art, performing art realm. And that's like in-person art experiences. Sarah, I know that you just were, you know, in Europe with your kids. I know you went to look, at a lot of lovely things. But I'm curious how that compared, I guess, to the experience of like doing that sort of thing with your kids in your hometown.
Well, I have to admit, I have not been very drawn to seek out art experiences, visual art experiences, like a gallery or a museum or an art fair or something with my kids. And I wonder why. I was thinking about why, and it might just be because in the general category of arts, I'm so drawn to performance. So I'm just, it's just kind of at the bottom. It's underneath theater and dance and music, and then there's visual art. But when we went to England and France, I really had very modest, realistic expectations of what my kids would be like looking at like a big hall of paintings. And I was pleasantly surprised. And I don't think my kids are special in any way. I just think I maybe didn't, sold them short in my own expectations. So it does leave me, I guess, wanting to seek out those things in my hometown a little more often. And again, to broaden our thinking, I don't think this has to be a like a classic art museum. Sometimes in your public library, they will like rotate through like local artists. I know we have like a chalk painting festival here in Santa Barbara. There's sometimes like maker fairs.
We have and ice carving, like ice carving festivals here.
That idea. Yeah. So again, it does not, it's not like the Louvre or nothing. I think there are opportunities in towns of all sizes. And yeah, this is not one I have been as intentional about, but seeing my kids appreciate visual art made me realize like, oh, that's on me. It's not because they're not capable of it.
You know, that's a really good point. I think that our visual art experiences were also more limited than performance art for the same reasons. I understand performance. It's what I'm drawn to. I don't consider myself someone who understands a lot about visual art, fine art, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And so I kind of assumed my kids wouldn't be into it. But a couple experiences stand out in my memory that kind of proved me wrong about that. One was when I definitely had all of them. So, but Clara was like in a stroller, I think. We all went to the big art museum in Chicago. I think it's just called the art. It's just called the Chicago Art.
I mean, no, the field's, it's the
Art Institute,
The field
is natural
right?
history. The Art Institute. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all went there and I was like, oh my goodness, they're like, they're going to be too little. They're not going to get it. You know, they were blown away. Now that place is seriously impressive. Like we were going through like the religious art exhibit and these are, we're talking, you know, 10 foot high or bigger, gilt framed immense paintings. And that was, and then like coats of arms and all kinds of like really cool stuff, weapons. Like there's the, what qualifies as art that will end up in a museum is often quite varied.
Yep.
And you never know what's going to grab your kids. Often there's lots there to capture the imagination. Kind of depends. Like if I went someplace and all it was black and white photos or something, they're maybe not going to care as much about that unless they were really into that. But everyone I've been to, so that was like one big experience.
Yeah.
And they did accidentally sit on a art installation that looked so much like a bench. It really did. I thought it was too, but well, that didn't go well. We got in trouble for that one. But why are you going to put a big piece of wood that's like horizontal and close to the ground? Kids want to sit on it. Anyway. There was a lot for them there. And then when we came back, I kind of then thought, well, then I need to make this more of a thing that we do. And we have sought out, smaller museums and usually find something that they like, or that they're interested in. And often they're really good about having areas for little kids or, things for older kids to kind of follow along with more tactile experiences. Like most museums now kind of know how to do it. And so I think that and even the ones that are really tiny that you could just quickly get in and out, like kids really like sculptures. They think those are interesting. Yeah. There's something for them to look at. Well, while we're talking about this, I did also just quickly want to mention that this is someplace where I do feel like online resources can be really helpful in, I guess, like helping orient you as a parent. And maybe you and your kid together to like what this even is, but this is the difference between real and not real. Like there's this joke going around that AI images often have like a sixth finger or
something's a little off.
Something is a little off. And I think this is someplace where the opportunity is just vetting the resources really well and having maybe a small selection of really trusted resources that you can lean on to maybe introduce something to an artist to your kids, or before you go to an art museum, check out their website and get familiarized with what's there and familiarize your kids. So they're excited and they know what to expect. There's lots of ways to like use the technology to help make the in-person experience better.
Yeah. And I would add to that, that when kids start to have a language for aesthetics, like what they like and what they see, it makes them in some ways more savvy media consumers. So it's almost like it's not one or the other, but they can go hand in hand. If kids have seen quote unquote real photography, paintings, and then they also, maybe they're interested in, I have kids who are really interested in like graphic design and internet memes. This isn't like which is bad and which is good, but the more language they have to talk about what they've seen, what they like about it, what, you know, how they respond to it, I think that actually may help in the end goal of being astute when it comes to images that they're seeing.
Yeah. The more you're familiar with something, the more like you have that entry point of comfort, and it just makes the whole experience better. So, let's not like the internet can be good for that sort of thing, especially if we're leaning on like the right kind of resources.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about human connection. I mean everything from small talk at the grocery store to our deeper relationships and how we nurture those in person with our voices. I just want to start by talking about my recent visit with my aunt Paula. Mm-hmm. She's 78 and I spent a week with her, and I was blown away by the number of phone calls she receives and answers. Not just that her phone rings, but she literally answers the phone in a day. I mean, she's on the phone all day and all night. And I remember my mom being the same way when I was growing up. Like the phone every evening, someone will call. Like one of her sisters would call. One of her brothers would call. Her friend would call. It was like me as a teenager. And it honestly made me a little jealous. I mean, you and I have Voxer, which is kind of like, sort of like that, but not exactly the same, because sometimes you just don't get it. Like, I just remembered you sent me a message the other night that I forgot to respond to that night and have not had a chance to. It's very possible with something like Voxer for the person on the other end, the receiver, to drop the ball. Mm-hmm. And you kind of can't do that in a phone conversation.
Yeah, it's not a real conversation. Yeah.
If you said something, if you talked at me for a few minutes and then I just didn't, I was silent, that would be weird. Like, I would have to engage with you on the phone. And I just thought about how she has these lifelong friendships with people who she doesn't see all the time anymore. Maybe she sees them monthly or less than that, but they're still talking all the time. And it made me feel kind of sad that I don't do that very much.
Yeah. I mean, it has changed so much. And as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, a side benefit of that for kids is when we're keeping up with our friends by tapping into our phone, like in our DMs or our texts or our Marco Polo or whatever, our kids are not actually hearing our voices speak to our friends and family. And I'm not saying like no mom is modeling this in any way. Of course we are. So nobody needs to like, this is not a thing to feel extra guilty about. But when you were overhearing your mom's half of all those conversations, it was sinking in. Everything from, what does she sound like when she is a little bit irritated? Like, how does she get off of a phone call? Like, how do you ask about how someone else is doing? How do you listen? And I'm just realizing how much more modeling, even using the phone, which is a technology, it's not in person, but how much more modeling of conversational style kids were exposed to before our quote, like keeping in touch, just kind of disappeared into this rectangle that we're on all day anyway. So our kids have no idea what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's making me think, what is the opportunity then?
Yeah.
You know, like, is the opportunity to, because kids are phone phobic. That's a joke, but it's real.
You mean to use it to call someone?
They don't want to get on the phone and order pizza anymore. Right. Like, my kids will jump through a lot of hoops to avoid having to make a phone call. Like, they're afraid of what will happen.
Yeah.
When the person on the other end picks up, like they might screw the whole thing up or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's a joke now, it's a meme, but it's real. And I do wonder how, like, I wonder how much my, I'm not afraid to pick up the phone and make a call, but I don't prefer it. I'd rather just have it taken care of on the internet if I can. And I do wonder what's lost there. And like, what is the opportunity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I will share, I have a couple just anecdotes about in-person human connection. So Reed, my 13-year-old, who just personality-wise, you know, he's a gamer, he's introverted, he's very tech-oriented. So interpersonal connection, human connection is not going to be the thing he probably seeks out. But he got into Dungeons and Dragons, surprising no one, this year. And it's been, or maybe last year, and it's been so sweet to see these young teenagers, they're all 13, 14, kind of like settle into a rhythm and ritual of their weekly game or campaign, I think you call it, their D&D session, because Megan, it's completely physical and in person. Yes. It's just like, first of all, they have to gather at someone's house. They're kind of at that awkward stage where we're trying to get out of the business of setting up hangouts for our kids, but the kids are still learning. So there's like all of the coordination they had to kind of figure out what's the time that worked for everyone. And then now there's like, they're in a rhythm. Somebody's going to be the DM. Someone's going to bring the snacks. Like they hang out in person with each other for 4 hours every week. And I could not be happier about it. I'm loving that for him. Luke, who's 15, almost 16 or 16 by now, I guess, planned a game night with all his theater friends a few weeks ago. And so there were like at least 10, maybe 12 teenagers, high school age kids who came over, and Luke got out a bunch of board games and thought maybe they'd play poker. And this is already sounding sweet and wholesome, but they actually ended up playing, you know, Mafia or Killer, one of those like role play, like yes. murder mystery type yep. games. Mm-hmm. And one of the kids had done a version where they actually, instead of sitting around a table or in a circle, they actually moved around the house. So like a dozen high schoolers prowling around in the dark in my house. And it just made me so happy. So I don't know what there's no tip here, except that these opportunities for real in-person gatherings and hangouts and games are so valuable, because our kids are going to be pulled in the opposite direction naturally. The world is conspiring. Yes. To not have them do this. So I'm not trying to take credit for the D&D or the game night. I've just been so glad that those opportunities have presented themselves.
Well, I think the opportunity, and I will also back up both of those things. D&D has been huge in all four of my boys' lives, and Clara, as much as she's been invited to the game with her older siblings, which is not always, maybe she'll start her own thing. Her own dungeon. What do you call it? What is it, the group called?
I forget. I always mess up all the words and then I get corrected.
We'll get it wrong. Anyway, her group, whatever. So like not just the embodied experience you're talking about is so true, but like also the part where you said they have to do it all the time. They have to show up. It's like they have to keep showing up because that's how they make the game move forward. So it's not a one and done. It's like a real thing.
Yeah.
And theater kids and probably band kids too are just like the best for those kinds of goofy games, I think. So and that's our experience. I'm sure like sports kids probably have their own version of whatever that is. I think the opportunity is being open to it, like either making the space in your house or your yard, someplace in your basement, whatever, for that group to meet, or to be open to what it takes maybe for you to help facilitate. Maybe it's a ride. Maybe like whatever. Maybe it's allowing them to clear their schedule from homework and to prioritize it. So it's not like a how-to tip, but there is some intention on the parents' side, I think, just to make that seem like something you value and that you support.
That's exactly right. It's kind of like internally, or maybe with your co-parent, identifying it as a value. You don't even have to say anything to your kid. You're just sort of like keeping an eye out. And like you said, helping reduce the friction so that they can do it when it pops up. I have one more really quick anecdote that I think, Megan, you'll appreciate as a theater person. But Luke he's performed now in a few musicals, but the last one was in March, and we were coming home, and He was like, Mom, you know what? He's like, one of my favorite things is just like hanging out in the dressing room and everyone's laughing. And it's just like, it's so fun. And I didn't want to be like, no, duh. But like, I'm sure for you and for me as a dancer, like dressing room and maybe it's locker room for the sporty types. That is like, if on my deathbed, if like I could name five experiences in my life that are pure joy. Yeah. For sure, one of the top five is dressing room bonding before and after a performance. Like, there's nothing better. But it was so sweet to have my kid realize this for the first time. It was like, Mom, you know what I've realized? Dressing room culture is really fun. And I'm like, like, it's the most fun. You'll be chasing that fun for the rest of your life, child.
Yeah, that is so true. I was thinking about that. Like, even the being in the wings and, like, you catch sight of someone else on the other side of the stage in the wings and, like, you're so amped for one thing, and everyone is having so like the time of their life. And so it is the most fun. It is still like the last show I was in, it was still the most fun. And I was 42 years old or something like that. So
I missed when people stopped getting married, because the closest I ever got to that was like the bridal get ready room. Well, you just got married. And I remember thinking, like in my late 20s and early 30s, when people were still getting married, I thought, oh, this is like dressing room culture. Everyone's got their makeup out and everyone's chatting and there's music playing and people are excited for a big thing. But no, that's been a while too. So I got nothing.
You need to go be in a show or something. Yeah.
Megan, our sponsor, Carnegie Hall Kids, is a free website for kids ages 5 to 12 to learn about music through fun games and quizzes. I'm really excited to tell everybody about their new Sights You Can Hear quiz. This is really cool. It's an online quiz you can do with your kids or they can do on their own, and it plays a piece of music, and then you guess what visual image or scene it sounds like.
Our listeners may have heard the name Carnegie Hall because of their live performances, but they might not know about all the educational resources they also have for kids and families on their website.
Carnegie Hall Kids ignites imagination in children, offering activities that both encourage musical curiosity and develop knowledge of musical concepts. And did we mention free? If you haven't yet, you're definitely going to want to check out Carnegie Hall Kids' interactive musical explorers around the world map. It teaches kids different musical traditions like Vietnamese folk, cumbia from Colombia, bluegrass and jazz from the U.S., and more.
Start the musical journey early and go to kids.carnegiehall.org to check out fun, child-friendly games and quizzes. That's kids.carnegiehall.org. All right, well, let's talk about sensory experiences. And this can include taste and smell and touch, like anything tactile, sensory in that way. I think this is probably the one that when your kids are really little, you're so encouraged to do this and think about it. Give them things to smell, talk about how things taste, you know, give them things to touch. And then as they get older, I guess we're just all off in our own worlds and we're not necessarily thinking about how our kids are experiencing the world tactily, but of course they are, yeah. And through their senses. So what do you got for me?
Well, the one that came to mind first was gardening and cooking, both of which, I mean, they are more being like, I would say they're being modeled at the adult level in our house. Brian is has the really robust vegetable kitchen garden, and both of us like to cook and eat. And so that seems like the most natural entry point. I think I shared in a recent episode when we were talking about food culture that I've really let go of like thinking of my kids' tastes in food as picky. And I've started to really like enjoy how specific they are. Like I like, oh my gosh, the way my kids like their toast or their bagel toasted. And our toaster has all these like digital, it could be like, it's like a number. And it's like, they're so specific and it could drive me crazy, but it's also they have more control now. They can make their bagel exactly right the way they want it. And Reed will do like a bagel with smoked salmon. He'll do like a whole lox bagel spread thing and really intentional and really specific about how they like their food. And I'm just kind of leading into that a little bit. I think Brian and I enjoy food that way. We like to talk about food. And then the garden has been great because we will be making dinner and I will literally be like, hey, okay, I need chives. Like somebody go out and get chives and like go see, you know, if the butter lettuce is good. And so the most tactile thing I think that my kids are experiencing probably right now is around food and eating in our home. But you're making me think, because that's not the only, those aren't the only senses that they're exposed to. Yeah.
No. And we've kind of talked, we've touched on visual, you know, visual like sight, and we've touched on sound through like arts and performance and stuff like that. I just think this other category, that's a really good example, like food and gardening encompasses both, well, all three really.
Yeah.
I struggled a little bit to come up with like a short list of things that my kids are tactily or in those other senses, like the way they're experiencing the world. But I came up with a little list. So Clara loves incense.
Oh, I loved incense when I was her age.
Yes. Well, I just think it's such a teenage girl thing, right? And she gets the next Champa, like the really classic. Uh-huh. It's been in the same box forever. It has that very, it's a yoga studio smell. Uh-huh. I don't always want to smell her incense downstairs. Like it's not always what I want to smell, but I've just really, it's her space. It's her room. Yeah. It's her space. I want her to feel like as long as she makes sure she puts it out at the end, she's 15 years old. She's old enough to be trusted with a lighter. I just want to allow her to have that sort of ability to set the stage of her bedroom.
Yes.
In the way she wants it to smell. And that's, I think, valuable in a really small way. You touched on flavors. I mean, I think it's really fun to introduce new flavors in food. I won't, you know, talk too much about that because you already kind of touched on it, and it's kind of obvious. And we've done other episodes where we talk about like introducing new flavors to kids. Yeah. But what an experience, like a plate of food can be. Mm-hmm. Even if all they do is push it around and smell it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's something there. There's something of value there. Another one that came to my mind is like fuzzy things, including cats.
My gosh. Yes.
Fuzzy blankets, fuzzy socks, fuzzy, even big kids love to, in fact, sometimes with older kids, that's one of the only gifts I can think of, like something fuzzy. Mm-hmm. And it's a way they're engaging with their senses and the cats, like watching them with the cats. You know what that's like.
Oh, I do. And we love the cats and the teenagers love the cats. And I even like the way cats smell, which I know people will find gross, but there's like a kitten-y smell.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Oh, I love it. Those are all great examples. Reed sleeps with a weighted blanket. That made me think that for some kids, that like gravity blanket, weighted blanket is also like a really positive sensory thing. And Violet has not gotten into incense yet. I'm sure she will, but she loves things that smell good. And she loves like beauty. I'm just using like in quotes, beauty products, like little body sprays. And the three kids' bedrooms are very close together. They're quite small and they all share a bathroom. So it's just like the end of this one hallway. It's like room, 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 bathroom. And I'll just say that the smells are varied coming out of those rooms.
They layer on top of each other in a weird, weird way. Sure. Clara had a body spray that a friend gave her at, I don't know, a birthday party or something. And she used it all up and was really sad about it because she loved the way it smelled. And I worked really hard to find her a replacement that had the same sort of scent, because I remember being that age and wanting things to smell a certain way, like how important that was. You wanted to smell like your Bath and Body Works flavor or whatever it was of, you know, you, that was really important at that age. And so I felt like it was worth putting effort into.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Well, what about creative expression? I know that we could probably go on all day about that, but is there any way that that's been really standing out for you, or a way that you've been helping create the opportunity for your kids to be creative?
Yeah. And I feel like I've touched on a few, so I'll try to be quick. I think I'm going to start with like a general tip for older kids. And that is, if you used to have art supplies and like craft supplies and things that kids would tinker and maker with, and they've kind of gotten out of the habit, if you switch where those things belong in your house, or just get out a big bin of them. We were just talking about this recently, Megan, about like putting out a thing of Play-Doh, or putting out, like, back to the big kids still having a little kid inside of them. I've gotten so much mileage out of just having things around my house that kids might draw with or fidget with or make with. And I know that's not exactly the same as like creative expression, but it is physical and it is tactile. And I think sometimes we throw up our hands, or I do throw up my hands and be like, well, everything's digital now. We're like, well, your entertainment is video games. But it's
and can I quickly interject? We lean on that because it's cleaner sometimes. I'm very guilty of that, of being like, well, but it's so self-contained, it doesn't mess the house up, blah, blah, blah. And even It's understandable that I felt that way when they were little, but that still sort of, I don't know, spills over sometimes, even though I'd like to see more mess. I'd like to see more creative mess now. I have to almost put myself back in that mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is, and those listening who have like little kids who are like into art supplies all the time, I remember that too, but now it's like reverse. I have to kind of get it out and put it there and see if anybody dives in. You know, a couple other things that came to mind. Violet loves to decorate. She likes to decorate a room. She loves to decorate for the holidays. I think I've talked on here about like, I can get out the Christmas decorations and kind of give her her own bin and she'll do her whole room. So that's a form of creative expression. And she likes to host parties too, which, back to the human connection, is something that I've allowed her to do, because it is a bit of an antidote to the group chats that start in fifth grade. I would much rather that she have a group over to the house
and that you get to deal with whatever the fallout for that is.
And the last thing I'll say is I have two kids who are very artistically inclined to make things and paint and draw and sew and bake. And I have one kid who is less so. So that's just, I guess I'm just acknowledging that because he's going to be who he's going to be. And we've already talked about some of the ways that he has found connection and creative expression, but also not all kids are going to show up the same way. And I just, I have two artists and one non-artist. And that's just, at this point, that's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah. Same in my house. I've got two who really stand out in my mind. Actually Clara and Jacob that are, have always been, you know, making, drawing, like always. And the others will go through periods where they do, like they all like manga, for example. So you'll see like little drawings, but it's not quite the same. It's not that urge to physically create. But then Will got really into music in high school, and Isaac's a great musician. And Owen is like into what he's into, which has been weird stuff like yo-yoing and like bottle flipping. Like he's just gotten into his very physical things that just aren't sort of in the creative. They're still creative. They're just not in the arts, which sometimes we have to remind ourselves that creativity goes way beyond painting, drawing, singing, and dancing. I mean, like there's a whole wide world of what being creative can be. I was thinking when you were talking about like the little art stuff everywhere when they're little, when Clara had those little scraps, like there was a 2 or 3 year period where there were tiny scraps of paper everywhere. She would make stickers. So she would make have a little drawing and then she would cover it with scotch tape. And she called that a sticker. She made like those little blind bags that I think were big on YouTube. I think they were like, actually, I'm not really 100% sure what they were. They were during the whole unboxing thing. And it would be a bag with a bunch of stuff in it. And she would make me what she called blind bags. And she'd just stuff little toys. And then I wouldn't know what was in it. And it was all decorated. Anyway, sometimes I feel so sad that that's not. Well, and also when we moved out of one of our houses where our hamster Scotty Cheese Hands died, we found that she had drawn RIP Scotty Cheese Hands with a little skull and crossbones everywhere under all of the like built-in shelves.
Like graffiti artist style.
She graffiti artist everywhere. We had to repaint.
She was processing her grief.
I know.
Really cute.
So it was really cute. And sometimes it's easy now to forget that she's still, like you said, she's still that same person.
Yeah.
It's just that now she's putting it in a sketchbook that she probably keeps under her mattress. Like she won't even let me look at stuff.
Right.
So I just keep supplying pencils and pens and paper, the paper that she requests. She requests specific things and I supply it. And sometimes I don't get to see what's on it.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point.
And that's okay. Like as long as I know she's getting use out of it, and I believe she is because she keeps asking for it, it's kind of not my business what she's doing with it. It's not performative. It never was. It's just that when she was little, it kind of became,
we just get to consume more of them when they're little. And it's also harder when they're little. So
Wow. I wanted to share another fun little anecdote. At Christmas, I gave Jacob a tiny little Dremel set, which is like the little, it's like a pen sized, kind of like a drill, but that you can carve like jewelry and things like that. And I didn't know what he would do with it. I think I saw it on Instagram and it just seemed like the kind of thing he would like. So I got him and he was like, oh, this is so cool. Now I can make things out of bone. And I thought, okay, sure, whatever. Well, now he texts me a lot and every couple of days he'll text me like, yeah, mom, just like carving bone. Or he met a girl and they hung out together and then they went someplace and carved some bone. So I guess I don't know where he's finding the bones.
I don't need to ask too many questions.
I don't ask.
Probably.
He's probably stealing them from like the mess hall. It's not a mess hall, the residence hall dorm or the dining hall. That's the word I'm looking for. Like stealing them out of a stew or something. I don't know. But he's getting his hands on some bones and he's carving them. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Have fun. And I think sometimes if you see something artsy and you think your kid might like it, it's maybe worth taking the risk.
I
don't know, sometimes it won't fly. Like there was a time I also got sold on Instagram this wooden spoon instrument, like it makes the sound of slapping two spoons together, and the guy was doing the most amazing things with it, and I gave it to the wrong kid. I won't say which kid I gave it to. It didn't ever get touched, but I might just re-gift it and give it to the right kid.
Or put it out in a different place on a different day and see.
You're right. See who picks it up.
Who picks it up. Yep. Totally. Yep.
All right. Well, I have one last one for us to talk about because we haven't, most of the things we've talked about so far have been kind of fun. They've been play. They've been things you do because you choose to.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about what's real, mm-hmm. I think there's really something valuable in allowing kids to be uncomfortable, to exist in a place of discomfort.
Yep.
And I'm going to start with a really obvious one that I think has gotten really hard for parents, especially of young kids. But I've noticed this with my older kids. Like when I give them a chore and they're uncomfortable, they're not happy about it. And I'm not happy that they're not happy about it. So I just said letting kids be cold or thirsty or hungry a little bit, but not like a Dickens novel. Like I'm not sending my kids out in a threadbare jacket so they can learn how to be uncomfortable or like making them go without dinner. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like, if we're on a car trip and they want me to stop at a gas station and get them a bottle of water, but we're going to have an opportunity to have water at a restaurant in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to do that.
Yep.
I'm not going to. And even when my kids were little, I was starting to rebel against carrying snacks everywhere because I was like, I think you can be hungry. You're probably not even really hungry, but I think you can be hungry for 15 minutes.
Yep.
Wanting to come in out of the cold immediately, like you just did all the things to get them in bundled up and they go out and they want to come right back in. You might need to move your body a little bit to warm up so that you can enjoy being outside. So there's like, there's value to that.
Oh my gosh. And I so don't much value.
Think we're good at doing that.
This is like, I am a split personality here because I so believe in this. And yet it is hard for me because I am someone who doesn't enjoy being physically uncomfortable myself. Yeah. And yet I feel like it was in the last couple years, there've been a lot of, books and podcasts and things about this. Well, it has to do with the whole like cold plunge thing too, right? Like the increasing our body and our system's tolerance for discomfort actually has like some real mental health benefits, I think, and things like that. In addition to just what you're saying, which is like, that is part of being in the real world is learning to tolerate a certain amount of physical discomfort. So yes to everything you just said. I am so grateful that my kids have had the opportunity to go to a school where they do a lot of outdoor education. So they do a lot of camping, backpacking, biking, mountain biking. And so there it has become someone else's job in that sector of their lives to kind of push them through some real physical discomfort. Reed camped at base camp at Mount Whitney this spring where he was sleeping in a tent when it was like 13 degrees outside. So that is, I'm just forever grateful that my kids have experienced some real physical challenges and physical discomfort that I have not had to be a part
You've
of.
You've been like, well, good for you. I did that already. Yeah, I'm not doing
exactly.
That again.
Yeah. But I do have another, I guess, a twist on this. And this brings us back to like, how easy technology has made our lives when it's time to go somewhere or buy something or like, just think about the experience of waiting in line or like, we just don't do a lot of this anymore. And so what I've really, I guess tried to be a little more intentional about with my teenagers is putting them in public and putting them in a situation where they have to navigate just being in public. It might mean taking a bus or walking downtown because it's only, I make Luke walk downtown all the time now from school. So from the high school to downtown where Brian's office is, or maybe where he's going to meet a friend. I'm like, I'm not going to come and drive you. It's about a mile, but like, it's fine. And I've taught them to use public transportation, which I feel a little bit like an outlier because I don't know anybody in my community who's having their kids ride public transport. But I just feel like when you are interacting with the public by sitting on a bus or walking through a crowded, busy street or waiting in line to get your snack, it's a different kind of participation in the world than ordering your Starbucks on your app, driving up to the mobile pickup, running in, getting it. And I don't know, maybe I'm just like being romantic about it, but I feel like I actually crave that. I crave more spontaneous interpersonal interactions, some of which, by the way, are unpleasant. Sometimes there's someone who's talking to themselves or like mentally unwell on the bus or waiting for the bus. Sometimes like the line is really long and the person behind the cashier is not doing a good job. It's like going back to that thing we talked about with like live performance isn't always good. Like being out in the world is not always comfortable, but I do think there's value in it.
Yeah. I could go on and on, but I'm just remembering that there was a world before FastPass at Disney and people still thought it was worth going to Disney. Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying FastPass is bad. I'm just saying for many, many decades, well, I actually don't know when it was invented, probably in the 2000s. For decades, let's just say, people stood in line to get on the Small World ride.
Yeah.
For 2 hours, maybe. And that was just life. Like, and it's, that's changed so much. And there's such an efficiency to the way we can move through the world now.
Yes.
And that's great. But like, efficiency becomes the goal at all other costs. And it doesn't feel like almost sustainable. Like there, at some point there has to be some experience you have where it's boring.
And I or think you like miss out on, this is where like, I'm going to sound really Pollyanna, but I think you miss out sometimes on the serendipitous
things
that happen when you're walking down the street and you run into somebody, you know, or
right.
I don't know what it is. You see a shop that you've never been in and you walk into it. I think a lot of this is I'm projecting some of my own feelings about where we are as a society onto my teenagers, but that's okay. I'm just trying to make sure that you talked about like experiencing discomfort. And I guess my twist on that is also just experiencing the unpredictability of moving physically through the world, whether it's public transportation or a long walk or like having to not use an app to get somewhere and buy something.
And having to not know.
Yeah.
Having to just not know.
Yeah.
Well, what a great conversation. I feel like we could do this for another hour.
Yeah.
But we can't. But not
today.
Not today.
For another time. Yeah, this was really great. Thank you for leading us through this.
Yeah, and this is the kind of topic I love to hear what other people have to say about. And a great place to do that is our Facebook group. So if you're not there yet, you can find it on Facebook. It's the Mom Hour Listener Community. And do answer the questions. There's a little questionnaire at the beginning when you're trying to join the group. We just like to make sure that the people joining the group are actually Mom Hour listeners because we think you guys are great and fewer randos get in that way. It's a great place to be, really thoughtful conversation. I saw somebody the other day said that our group is the only reason they're still on Facebook.
Yeah.
Which made me very happy because I think it's the only reason you and I are still on Facebook too.
That's right. Yeah, it is a great group. The link to join is right in the show notes. And like Megan said, just answer. It's just like, what episode have you listened to lately? And do you agree to our rules? It's not a hard
test. Yeah, it's not like a quiz or anything.
But there's so many motherhood and parent support groups on Facebook that we really aren't interested in being another one of those if we don't have the Mom Hour in common. That's the goal.
Right.
So. Yep. All right, everyone. Well, have a great weekend, and we will be back with you on Tuesday.
See you then.
Thanks for listening to The Mom Hour. Everything we talked about in today's episode is available at themomhour.com. And hey, while you're there, you can find more than 500 podcast episodes, plus articles, playlists, and resources about motherhood and parenting at every stage.
And if you like today's episode, we'd love it if you would take a minute to share the show with another mom in your life. You can also find us on Instagram at The Mom Hour, chatting and interacting with listeners between episodes.
Thanks for being here, friends. We'll talk to you soon.